Now, reading this morning is in John chapter 6. John chapter 6, verses 1 to 15. And it's on page 1069. John chapter 6. Sometime after this, Jesus crossed to the far shore of the Sea of Galilee, that is the Sea of Tiberias. And a great crowd of people followed him because they saw the miraculous signs he had performed on the sick. Then Jesus went up in a mountainside and sat down with his disciples. The Jewish Passover feast was near. When Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming towards him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. Jesus answered him, 8 months' wages would not buy enough bread for each one to have a bite. Another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. Here's a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish, but how far will they go among so many? Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." There was plenty of grass in that place, and the men sat down, about 5,000 of them. Jesus then took the loaves, gave thanks, and distributed to those who were seated as much as they wanted. He did the same with the fish. When they had all had enough to eat, he said to his disciples, "Gather the pieces that are left over. Let nothing be wasted." So they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of the 5 barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. After the people saw the miraculous sign that Jesus did, they began to say, "Surely this is the prophet who is to come into the world." Jesus, knowing that they intended to come and make him king by force, withdrew again to a mountain by himself. I mean, well, we've all heard that story before. I think it's a very familiar one, isn't it? One of the first ones we come across at Sunday school and endlessly year after year. Very familiar story. The story of the feeding of the 5,000, except it wasn't the feeding of the 5,000, actually, because it was 5,000 men. Well, how many women must there have been? Think how many men are here this morning, how many more women? Multiply the 5,000 by goodness knows how many, and then all the children as well. It was a much, much bigger miracle even than just the feeding of the 5,000. What I want you to do this morning is look at it from 3 points of view. I want you to look at it from the point of view of the people themselves, and then from the point of view of the disciples who were involved in the miracle, and then from the point of view of Jesus. So we're going to zoom in from 3 different angles this morning. So first of all, our focus is on the people. They are represented here as a people who are hungry only for the world, it seems. You see, you might get quite excited with this story at the beginning. 5,000, 10,000, 20,000, whatever the number actually was, people actually coming out to hear Jesus speak. Wow, we would all be really impressed with that. We'd be quite impressed if there were 500 coming in that door on a Sunday, wouldn't we? People hungry coming to follow Jesus. But why were they following Jesus? Why did they go all the way around the lake to find Jesus? Well, it tells us, doesn't it? And it's just not quite as thrilling as maybe we first thought. You see, it says there, sometime after this, Jesus crossed the far shore of the Sea of Galilee, and a great crowd of people followed him, because they saw the miraculous signs he'd performed on the sick. That's why they were following Jesus. Because they saw the miraculous signs and were looking for more of that kind of thing. It was 5,000, 10,000, 20,000 people looking for what they could get out of Jesus. Not really following Jesus for who he is. Not really understanding all that Jesus had to offer. Just focusing on what they could get now. Now, that's a very common thing today because we live in an instant society, don't we? Everything has to be now. Anything we want has to be now. So much of our food is produced now so that we can have it now. Everything focuses on the now, and that's what these people were focusing on. What can we get out of Jesus now at this very moment? Now, is it unfair of me to interpret it like that? Well, if we jump for a minute into verse 26, which we'll look at again in a week or two, Jesus says, I tell you the truth, you are looking for me not because you saw miraculous signs, because you ate the loaves and had your fill. So they move on from looking for the signs to just looking for some food to fill their stomachs. Instead of going up in their estimation of looking for Jesus, they go down. This is a people who were hungry only for what this world had to offer, or what Jesus had to offer them in this world at this time. So that raises the question, what's your interest in Jesus? Why are you here this morning? Is it because you've come because you want a fresh encounter with Jesus? Because you want all that he has to offer? Or is it just something you do every Sunday because you have nothing else better to do? Is it an insurance policy? Because you think it'll tick the box before God? Is it because you really want to worship this Jesus? Is it to calm your conscience because you've done one or two nasty things this week and think I'd better go to church to get that sorted? Why? Why are we people who follow Jesus? The crowds follow Jesus for a bit of excitement and not much more. They followed Jesus for what they thought he could give them right there and now. Robert Kennedy, John F. Kennedy's brother, said, everybody basically has an empty hole inside of them that they try to fill with money, drugs, alcohol, and power. And none of the material stuff works. Well, they were following Jesus, in some sense, just for the material stuff. They did, of course, get what they were looking for. If you set your sights only so high, you'll only get what so high has on offer. They came looking for physical, for material, for miraculous things. And they got their stomachs filled, didn't they? The end of the story, we're told. They were all full. They'd had plenty to eat. And there was a stack left over. Their expectation was met precisely at the level of their expectation. They wanted bread, and bread is what they got. But it's a wee bit sad, isn't it? Because there was so much more they could have had from Jesus that day. If they'd lifted their expectation, if they'd looked beyond the now, if they'd looked beyond what just the world had to offer. You see, if we ever get on into chapter 6, we'll eventually get to verse 35. And in verse 35, Jesus says, I'm the bread of life. He who comes to me will never go hungry, and he who believes in me will never be thirsty. They could have had that. Instead, they had one meal. Do you know something? When they woke up the next morning, they were hungry again. Because that's all the expectation they had in their lives. They set their sights far too low. They wanted less than the best. And that's true even at the end of today's portion. Because when they've all been fed and well fed, they do raise their expectation a bit. They think, oh, maybe this person is more than we thought. Maybe it's the prophet that's supposed to come. And then they think, oh no, maybe we could make him king. And they begin to have the thoughts of making him king. So looking for now, for someone who would help them rise up against the Roman authorities and set them free, they began to think we could make him that kind of king and we could get freedom from the Roman power over us. But again, they set their sights too low. Jesus wasn't going to be bothered being king of the Jews. Why would he be bothered to be king of the Jews? He was king of kings. He was lord of lords. But they set their sights way too low again. Lee Atwater, who was a famous Republican, said the 80s were about acquiring wealth, power, and prestige. I know. I acquired more wealth and power and prestige than most. But you can acquire all that you want and still feel empty. Pope John Paul II said, materialistic concerns and one-sided values are never sufficient to fill the heart and mind of a human person. A life reduced to the sole dimension of possessions, of consumer goods, of temporal concerns will never let you discover and enjoy the full richness of your humanity. It's only in God, in Jesus, God made man, that you will fully understand what you are. So first of all, in this story this morning, we have a people who are hungry only for this world and miss out on so much. There's so much more for us to have in Jesus than just what this world has to offer at this time. So let's raise our heights. Let's raise our expectations. Let's begin to hunger for more, for all that Jesus has to offer us. Don't let's be a people who are hungry just for this world. Jesus has so much more to give. Sadly, there are many churches that settle for just that, don't they? They're interested in a Jesus who spurs them out into the world to touch lives and to help the poor and the hungry and so on. And that's all good. But Jesus is more than just somebody who pushes us out to help those in the world. He's the Savior. He's the Lord. He has eternity in his arms. He has eternal life to give us. He has a complete change of personality and outlook able to give us if we look for that and trust him. So let's raise our eyes higher for what Jesus has to offer and not settle as these people did for much less than the best. So that's the first thing. A people hungry only for God's word. Now let's think about the disciples, and two in particular. The disciples are people in this story who don't quite come up to scratch. So we've got to look into our own hearts. Are we a people too who don't quite come up to scratch? Is God pleased with us this morning? Is Jesus happy with the way we are as his followers? So we turn our attention to the two particular disciples. The first one is Philip. Philip, it seems, is somebody like the crowds who can't look beyond now, who can't look beyond the material things in this world. Once the crowds had gathered and Jesus had taught them all day and they were all tired and hungry and they were beginning to think of something to eat, and Jesus was thinking of that as well, Jesus singles out Philip for some reason and gives him a test. It tells us here it was a test. None of us like tests. Do you remember tests? I had a nasty French teacher, and she used to say, "We're going to have a party tomorrow." And what she meant was a test. I mean, how sick is that? Miss Smith, she was called. We called her Miff. That was her nickname. Test. Nobody likes tests. Well, Philip here has a test. Jesus wants to find out just how far down the road of faith has Philip gone. He's seen various miracles happen with his own eyes. So here's a question, Philip. All these people are hungry. What can we do about that? It's a test. Did Philip instantly think, "Oh, Jesus is here. This is the Jesus who heals the sick. This is the Jesus who raises the dead. This is the Jesus who walks on water." Did he think any of these things? No. He thought, "There's no shops. And even if there were shops, how on earth could we pay for it? Look at them. There's thousands of them. It would take 8 months' wages just so that each of them got a bite, never mind a meal. It's absolutely impossible." He focused on the power, the problem, and the size of the problem, and didn't look at the Jesus who was bigger than any problem. Focused just on the problem. Didn't lift his eyes up to see beyond the problem. Didn't lift his eyes up to see Jesus. See what Jesus could provide. That was Philip's failure. And very often that's our failure, isn't it? When problems come, we can only see the problem. We don't see the Jesus who is bigger than that problem. Many years ago, when I was minister in my first charge away up in the north of Scotland, Kinlaberby, we used to have communion seasons up there where services started on the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday and Monday. Two services every day. And after the morning service, there was always the announcement from the pulpit, if anybody wants to come in to the manse for lunch, you're very welcome. And folks from the two villages that were 18 miles on either side of Kinlaberby would come in, and all the old wifies who were widows and so on, they would come in. And you never knew from one day to the next how many folks would turn up. So it was a wee bit hard for my wife to cope with the catering. But after we'd had 2 or 3 years of it, we got zoomed in. And it was one Friday, particularly when this happened. Friday, normally, we'd about 15 would come in. So my wife had prepared 2 little chickens and all the stuff that you need to go with that. It was fine, except 15 people didn't come in. 30 people came in. And she looked at the 2 wee chickens. And she thought, well, I've got a tin of ham, I can open that. So she opened the tin of ham. And she and one of the other women, and they met recently and were remembering this event, recalling it. They said, well, we'll just have to pray over it. So they prayed over it. And they began dividing out the chicken, and it filled the 30 plates. And everybody was fed. And there was enough chicken left over for 2 pies the next day. A wee 5,000 feeding miracle. Just a wee one. But they looked beyond the chickens and prayed. And God did something that day. Philip failed to do that. Andrew is a tiny little bit better, isn't he? Because he's thinking of the problem and he's looked around and he finds this wee boy who has his wee picnic. 5 wee rolls. They wouldn't be loaves, they would be wee rolls and 2 wee fish that he's brought for his own picnic. And Philip says, oh, look, we've got this. And he takes it to Jesus. Look, we've got 5 loaves and 2 fish. And then you think, oh, but it's not enough to feed all this crowd. Just for the glimmer of a moment, I think there was faith, there was hope. But then he looked at it, oh, no, that won't do. One good thing for Andrew was he did take it to Jesus, didn't he? That was good. Took it to Jesus. Because what else do you do when there's a problem in your life? Where else are you going to go? Where else is there ever going to be an answer or solution but in Jesus? At least Andrew took it to Jesus. And that's good. But I'm afraid still we have to say they were disciples who didn't quite come up to scratch. How about you? When trouble comes, when problems loom, do you take it to Jesus? Do you look over the problem to see the Jesus who can take that problem and do something with it? Do you look at the tiny little thing you've got, the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and you think, no, Jesus can't do anything with that? Or do you grasp the truth that no matter how little there is in your heart, or no matter how little you have that's relevant to this problem, Jesus can do something with it? Nothing is ever too small, too pathetic for Jesus to do something with it. We need to look at the Jesus who can take the least little thing we have and do something amazing with it. For that's what he did in this situation. Disciples who don't quite come up to scratch. So what about Jesus? Well, Jesus is someone who knows what he is doing in this situation. As the story progresses, we learn quite a lot about Jesus, and perhaps especially about his motivation here and his priorities. It's very clear that the first thing that Jesus is really out to do in this situation is to give some training to his disciples. In fact, that's why he'd gone round the lake to the other side of the lake in the first place, because he wanted away from the crowds. He wanted time out just with his disciples. He wanted to devote himself to a training session with them. But then all these people came and kind of spoiled that wee plan. But didn't it stop Jesus thinking, well, how can I use this to train my disciples? And so he zooms in on Philip, I'll begin with him. And he zooms in on Andrew, and I'll begin with him. And he zooms in on the other 10 and involves them in the miracle. And he focuses in on them. In the midst of the thousands, he still finds time for the 1 and the 2 and the 10. And it's a huge thing for us to grasp. Jesus will always have time to zoom in for you. Even if you're just 1 or 2 or 10, he'll take time to zoom in for you. Because Jesus is in the training business. Yes, he has compassion for the crowd, but he has specific interest here just for his own disciples. Doesn't he focus in on the point here, does it? But in the other repeat stories in the other Gospels, it was actually the disciples who did it, wasn't it? Jesus gives them the 5 wee rolls and the 2 fish and divides it amongst the 12 of them. And he says, now you go and divide it amongst the people. And it was actually the disciples who kept breaking off bits of bread and bits of fish to give to everybody. And it kept happening, and it kept happening, and it kept happening. And it was their hands, and it was them that were doing it in the power of Jesus. What smashing training that was. Surely that must have been a faith-boosting experience, except it wasn't it, because a wee while later there's the same thing happens with 4,000 and they've forgotten it. How could they forget doing it? But they did. But then we're all a bit like that. But here's Jesus taking time out to train his disciples. It is very clearly a Jesus who knows what he's doing. Right from the moment he raised the question of the physical needs of the crowd, Jesus had a plan. It tells us that. Jesus was testing Philip, oh, but he knew what he was going to do. It tells us that, doesn't it? Because Jesus had a plan. Jesus, you see, learned something very important from his own father. Because one thing we learn about God is that God had plans. And God had all his plans in place before he even made the universe. In fact, he had his plans so much in place that in God's head, Jesus had already been crucified. It was so certain, the plan that he had laid out. God is someone who plans from the beginning, and his plans are so secure that they always happen. And Jesus obviously learned that. He had his own wee plan here for this particular situation. And so his plan was that he was going to feed this huge multitude of people. Jesus will never be caught out. Nothing ever comes into our lives by accident. Nothing is ever a coincidence. God has his plans. Jesus has his plans. And when something unexpected happens to us, we need to say to ourselves, that's part of the plan. It's part of what he has laid out for us, because Jesus knows what he's doing and has his plans. And of course, the big theme of this wee story is that this Jesus who has planned for us is a Jesus who supplies all of our needs. John is very down to earth in telling the story. The part that the disciples played, organizing the crowd, distributing the bread. The emphasis is more on the provision, because that was the expectation the people had set in their minds. They were all fed, all satisfied, all full, and there was loads left over to be used another day. It was a story, a parable of the Jesus who can supply all of our needs whenever they come. Complete satisfaction. Of course, much more was going to be on offer, but they didn't have any expectation of that. They didn't hope for that. They didn't ask for that. So they would have to wait for that to come. Thousands of people fed with a tiny offering. Millions of people since fed in their spirits to the fullest of spiritual satisfaction by this Jesus. The Jesus who can come and who can meet every need that we possibly have in this life. If we raise our expectation, if we look to him for that. The story ends with a Jesus who is absolutely committed to doing whatever his Father wants. A Jesus who's absolutely committed to fulfilling God's plan for him and for the world and for eternity. The story ends with people clamoring to make Jesus a king. So what does Jesus do when he discovers that that's what's going on in their head? He gets up and he goes off on his own to find a lonely place to commune with his Father. To find a place where he can say to his Father, I'm committed to you. I'm committed to the plan. I'm not going to be diverted. Who wants to be king of the Jews? The devil had offered him to be king of the world. Who wants to be king of the world? One day I'm going to be king of kings. Why would I settle for less than that? So he commits himself afresh to the plan and to the will of God for his life. Jesus always knows what he's doing. We trust in Jesus, we will find that he knows what he's doing for us. And just as Jesus commits himself to the will of God for him, perhaps we need to challenge ourselves to commit ourselves to the will of God for us. Martin Luther King said, like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up the mountain. I've looked over and I've seen the promised land. Malcolm Muggeridge said, "Not as I will, but as thou wilt." To be able to say these words and truly mean them is the highest point we can ever hope to attain. Then indeed, we are broken out of time's hard shell to breathe not its stale air, but the fresh, exhilarating atmosphere of eternity. Jesus submits to God's will. Are you submitting to God's will, to God's plan for your life this morning? Well, there we are then, a people who sadly were hungry only for this world. Disciples who didn't quite come up to scratch. But a Jesus who always knows what he's doing. And what he's doing is the will of God for him, but also for us this morning.